Hey everybody, it's Jeff. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you probably know that our goal here at Your Move is to help you make better decisions and as a result, enjoy life with fewer regrets. Now, just a couple of times a year, we ask our podcast listeners to join the group of people who already donate to Your Move. It's our supporters who make this podcast possible. Seriously, we could not do it without you. So if listening to this podcast has ever inspired you to make a better decision or has helped you live life a little differently, would you consider making a tax-deductible donation to Your Move? Visit yourmove.is/give. That's yourmove.is/give to give now. Again, that's yourmove.is/give. It takes less than 2 minutes to help us keep making Your Move, and we really hope that listening to the Your Move podcast has made your life better this year. Thanks for your support. We really do believe that the next 30 minutes will help you make better decisions and as a result, enjoy life with fewer regrets. So today, we're going to begin with Andy's first message in his three-part series, Light of the World. For many, the Christmas season is complicated, but no matter your circumstances, Christmas can be a reminder of light overcoming darkness.
I really do love this time of the year, and part of the reason I love this time of the year, Christmas, is because my family right now is not complicated. And I say right now because I should say it's not complicated yet, because eventually every family gets a little bit complicated, but right now there's six of us, and it's just not very complicated. We all get along. We all love to be together. We host Christmas at our house. Sandra cooks. Her extended family comes to be with us, and sometimes when they're in town, my extended family comes. So I really, really do love this time of year. And again, because right now for us, right now, it's not complicated. And I think one of the reasons that's such a big deal to me is because for the last really like 24 or 25 years, my family of origin was very complicated. And some of you understand this. For about 25 years, the four of us were never able to get into the same room during Christmas. You know, any two of us, any three of us, just about, but getting all four of us together. And it's nobody's fault. You know, the history doesn't matter. The story doesn't matter. It was just relationally complicated. And throughout the year, as you know, you're not really aware of that because, you know, we can have lunch and we can have dinner. The two of us can meet. But at Christmas, the time frame gets compressed, right? Because there's that Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, night before Christmas thing that gets so important, and who's going to be with who and who's coming over, and if they're coming, they can't come. And we just, you know, it's just complicated at Christmas. So for the past 20 something years, it's just been complicated because we host, and I've sort of had to navigate and officiate and decide who can come when and who can't. And it's just extremely complicated. And it makes me so grateful that right now, you know, my immediate family, the six of us, it's just not complicated. The most complicated maybe Christmas of all for me is when this whole thing got started about, I'm thinking about 24 years ago. It was the first Christmas my parents had split up. And some of you have your own story. So this is my sad story. And so we're coming up on Christmas and we had a tradition where my family would go to my parents' house. We would do Christmas Eve, you know, open gifts, have a big dinner. And then about 10 or 11 at night, we'd jump in the car and go to Sandra's family's house. She lives about 2.5 hours outside. Her family lives in a town about 2.5 hours from Atlanta. So we had this tradition. So as we're approaching this first Christmas where my mom had moved out, she's living somewhere else, she has her own Christmas plans. My dad's in the house that I'd kind of grown up in through college, end of high school and college. He's there in this big house by himself. And as we're approaching Christmas, it dawns on me, uh-oh, if we do what we normally do, Sandra and I and our little son, Andrew, he was a baby, and it was the first grandchild on our side and the first grandchild in Sandra's entire family. So he's like a really, really important deal, you know, that first grandchild. So as we're approaching Christmas, it dawns on me, what are we going to do? Because my mom already has plans. So, you know, she's got some folks. My dad's going to be in this big old house by himself. And so we're going to show up on Christmas Eve if we do our normal thing, have Christmas Eve dinner with him. It's just him and me and Sandra and a baby. And then exchange gifts, and then we jump in the car and leave him by himself in this big house, and then he wakes up Christmas morning by himself, and it was just killing me to think about this. I mean, as we got closer and closer, I thought, what are we going to do? You know, how do you navigate? How do you make everybody happy? And so I did, in that circumstance, what I would normally do. I did two things. I prayed, and then I called my buddy Charlie Renfro. Now, Charlie, you've heard me mention Charlie before. Charlie was a guy that mentored me through the years, and whenever I had, you know, just kind of a no-win situation or a problem or a question, I would go to Charlie and say, Charlie, what do I do? So I called Charlie. I said, we need to get together. Christmas is coming, and I really don't know what to do. This is complicated. And so we got together, and Charlie did what Charlie would always do. He didn't answer my question. He told me a story. And this is the story he told me. He said, Andy, let me tell you something. He said, just a little while after Patty and I got married, a few years after we got married, one night we're going to go out and celebrate our anniversary. We're all dressed up and she's looking beautiful and I'm looking sharp. And we're about to walk out the door and the phone rings. And I answer the phone and it's my mama. And my mama says, Charles, your daddy's acting up again. I need you to get over here and help me. Now, Charlie's dad was a Second World War veteran. And in some sense, he was a hero. But as is the case sometimes with veterans, when he finished that war, he came back home and he had different wars he had to fight, different battles to fight. And on this particular night, one of those battles had kicked in. And so he's on the phone, standing there looking at Patty at the door, ready to go celebrate their anniversary. He's on the phone, his mom saying, hey, you know, Charles, I need you to come help me. And Charlie looked at me and said, Andy, and I on that evening, I made a strategically bad decision. He said, I got in my car and raced off to try to solve a 40-year-old problem that I wasn't about to be able to solve, and in doing so, created a brand new problem at home. Now, for some of you, that was worth getting up for just to come hear that part of the story, because I just solved one of your big Christmas dilemmas, but I'm going to keep going. He said, so he looked at me. He said, so Andy, he said, let me tell you what you do. You and Sandra and your youngin', you get over there and you have dinner with your daddy. You open some gifts. You have a nice meal. And when it's time to go, you load them both up and you head on up the road to spend Christmas Eve and Christmas Day with Sandra's family. And that was good advice. And that's what I did. But it felt terrible. It just felt terrible. It felt wrong. In fact, I called my dad yesterday. I said, Dad, can I share this story? He said, absolutely. He said, that's what Christmas is for most people to some degree. I said, absolutely, it is. And I called Charlie. I said, hey, is it okay, Charlie, if I tell this story? He said, absolutely. He said, it's a good story and it's true. And to some extent, at some point in all of our lives, it's a little bit of our story. Because here's the thing at Christmas that makes Christmas so wonderful and sometimes so terrible. And it's mostly wonderful. But the thing that creates the tension in Christmas is this. At Christmas, Christmas exaggerates all the bad and at the same time points us to something that's absolutely incredible. Because Christmas is the most wonderful time of the year, but it's not the most wonderful time of the year necessarily because of what is happening around us. It's the most wonderful time of the year, but it's not the most wonderful time of the year because of what's happening. Because what's happening oftentimes at Christmas and what gets exaggerated and what gets focused on because the time gets compressed is that at Christmas we're reminded that there are problems we can't solve, right? There are people we can't control, right? And there's expectations we can't meet. And the truth is, if we pause long enough to look in the mirror, I'm the problem I can't solve, right? And I'm the person I can't seem to control, and I'm the person oftentimes setting expectations that other people can't meet. So at Christmas, it really is the most wonderful time of the year, but it's not necessarily the most wonderful time of the year because of what is happening. Christmas is absolutely the most wonderful time of the year because of what happened. And at Easter, we celebrate an event, a one-time event. But at Christmas, we celebrate a season where we look forward to an event that changed everything, where God sent his son into the world to become the center of history. But more important for you and more important for me, he sent his son into this world to become the center of my life and the center of your life. And when Jesus becomes the center of your life, and when Jesus becomes the center of my life, it centers our life on something stable, on something hopeful, on something that gives us a sense of purpose, a sense of I don't need to fear, even though there are many, many things to fear. That there's a sense in which Christmas is not the most wonderful time of the year because of who physically is with us, but it's the most wonderful time of the year because at Christmas we are reminded who is for us. And the darker things get and the more complicated things get, and at Christmas time, everything gets a little bit exaggerated, but at the same time, at Christmas time, we're able to focus on the light of the world that has come into this world to make an extraordinarily practical difference in each of our lives. Now, as you know, or if you grew up in church, you probably know this, but at the beginning of the New Testament, there are four Gospels. There's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And there's four different accounts of Jesus' life. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, their accounts are very similar. John's is very different. John's very different. And John, unlike Matthew and unlike Luke, doesn't give us a birth announcement and doesn't talk about the birth of Jesus in the same way. John kind of gives us a different perspective. And the thing that's so fascinating about the Gospel of John is this. And again, if you read the Bible, you may not pick this up. And if you're new to church, again, you may think of the Bible as just a bunch of stories. In fact, the Bible is history. But the thing that makes John's Gospel so unique, especially this time of the year, is that when John wrote his Gospel, he was a very old man. He was a very old man. In fact, most people think that his gospel was the most written latest of all the gospels. And when John sat down to write his gospel, we don't know this for sure, but it seems as if maybe he was thinking, I better write this down because I don't have a lot of time left. And I want to make sure that these stories are passed on for future generations, because there is no doubt, we know from the book of Acts, that John had told these stories many, many, many times, hundreds of times. Imagine if you're somebody who sat at the feet of Jesus, how popular you would be with Christians. Anywhere John went, anytime John went anywhere, Christians would say, tell us what it was like. We've heard the stories, but you were an eyewitness. So he's told these stories many, many, many times. John is the person, this is amazing, especially when you find out more about him. John is the person that reduced God to a single word. John is the person that sat back and said, okay, let me make this as simple and as clear as possible. God is, remember this? Love. John is the one who said that. And the thing that's so amazing about John saying that is because of what John had seen and what John had experienced in his life. He's a very, very old man. And he's experienced loss like you cannot even begin to imagine, no matter what your story is like. He's lost friends. He's lost family members. He's lost, in some ways, he's almost lost his whole society and his whole culture. John was alive when Nero sent General Vespasian into Galilee. And he began to work his way down through Galilee, rolling up all these Jewish cities and all these Jewish towns, slaughtering thousands and thousands of Jewish people and sending thousands and thousands of men, women, and children into the slave markets of Rome. John lived through that. John lived through the time when Vespasian left his son outside the city of Jerusalem, the holy city of Jerusalem, where John had spent many, many years and had experienced some of the most amazing events of his life in the city of Jerusalem. And he either saw that city surrounded, we don't know, or perhaps John was in the city of Jerusalem for those 7 months when people starved to death, plagues broke out, and the Roman army built a ditch and a wall all the way around the city trying to get inside that city. At the end of that Jewish war in 70 AD, John was either there or heard the story about the temple being burnt to the ground. Over 1 million Jews were slaughtered. Over 100,000, over 200,000 or 300,000, some say, slaves were taken from the city of Jerusalem and again flooded the Roman slave markets. By the time he had written this, his friend Peter and his friend Paul had been executed by Nero. And through all of that bloodshed, and through all of that loss, and through all of that chaos that we cannot even begin to imagine, John never lost faith. In fact, at the end of his gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, at the end of the gospel of John, here's what John writes. He says this. He says, Jesus performed many other signs, because he's filled his gospel with the signs that Jesus had performed, 7 specific signs. He said, Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. In other words, I've just given you a taste of what we experienced with Jesus. And then he says this, but these are written that you may believe. In other words, the reason I'm even writing this gospel, the reason I'm leaving this with you, is I'm hoping that after you read this account of Jesus' life, you won't simply be, you know, impressed. You won't simply be amazed. But I'm writing this so that you might believe Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life. Not physical life, because everybody reading this already had physical life, that you may have a different kind of life in his name. That in spite of what John had seen, in spite of what John had smelled, in spite of what John had experienced, at the end of his life, with the destruction of everything important to him and the loss of just about everyone important to him, John still believed that Jesus was the source of some kind of life that went beyond physical life. So when he begins his gospel, he doesn't begin with the birth narrative. Now, this is fascinating to me because when Jesus was crucified, as Jesus was dying, he says to John, this same John, John, I want you to take Mary, my mother, as your mother. And Mary, I want you to view John as your son. So how much time John and Mary spent together, we don't know. Some people say they left, eventually went to Ephesus, and he took care of her until she died. But we know that John heard over and over and over the birth narrative. If anybody had had the opportunity to say, Mary, tell me what it was like one more time. Mary, what was it like when you discovered you were pregnant? Mary, what did you feel when the angel appeared? Mary, what was it like to know that you bore the Son of God? I mean, he'd heard this story so many times. He was the person that took care of Mary, the mother of Jesus. And yet when John begins his gospel, he doesn't begin with shepherds. He doesn't begin with a manger. He doesn't begin with Egypt. He doesn't begin with Herod and the slaughter of children, little boys in Bethlehem. He begins with the significance of the birth of Jesus. And just like they were very, very dark days when John wrote this gospel, John was reminded that Jesus was born at a time when it was very, very dark as well. And when he sat down to start his gospel, before he got into the narratives, before he got into the details, here's what he said. And this is so extremely powerful. Because in a time of our lives and in a season of our lives when things can get so complicated, when we're reminded not only of who is coming, but who won't come, when we're reminded of what we're going to get and we're reminded of what we will never get, John begins his gospel with the birth of Jesus this way. Here's what he says. He says, in him, Jesus, in him was life, not physical life. In him, and John's trying to put it into words. You know, he's got all this experience. He's had all this time to think about it, and he's had all this perspective, and he's seen things come and go and people born and die, and he's seen the destruction of everything important. And he summarizes it. He said, when I think about Jesus, the best way I know to put it is in him was life. And that life was the light of all mankind. Now, this was such a huge statement because when Jesus showed up on the planet and they began to view him as the Jewish Messiah, they thought that what Jesus was going to do would be regional, that what Jesus would do would be for Israel, that what Jesus would do would be a manifestation or a continuation of the Old Testament. And John sits back as an old man and he says, I realize now that Jesus didn't simply come for us and Jesus didn't simply come for the Jews, that what Jesus came for was all mankind, that he brought an element of life and he brought a light that was for all mankind. And John was there the day when Jesus had risen from the dead and he gathered everyone together and they said to Jesus, okay, Jesus, is now the time that you're gonna restore Israel as a kingdom? Is now the time that you're gonna restore the nation Israel? Are we about to do something new and run the Romans out of here and reestablish our independence? Is now the time? And John was there when Jesus said, that's none of your business. The reason that you're here is because you are to go into every single nation and you are to share with every single ethnic group and every single people group what you have heard me say. You are to make disciples of all nations, that this light isn't a Jewish light. This is a light for all mankind. And then he says this. This is my favorite part. Again, he's just starting off his gospel. It's like, well, here's the introduction. And the light shines in the darkness. And he thought about the darkness around him. Darkness that, again, we can't really even begin to imagine. He says, in spite of everything that's happened, everyone who's died, everyone who was executed, everyone who was crucified, everyone that was taken away, in spite of the fact that the whole Jewish nation is basically out of business at this point, in fact, in spite of the fact that the temple, the sacrificial system is out of business, never to be restarted, by the way, in spite of everything I've grown to know and to love is gone, in spite of that, this light shines in the darkness, in spite of all that. And then he says, and the darkness has not, and I think he paused and thought, what's the right word? It's like everyone understands what it means for light to shine in darkness, for light to shine in darkness and to expose what was in the darkness. But this light of Christ, this light of Jesus, it shines in the darkness, and it's as if the darkness, as hard as it has tried to put it out, to snuff it out, to overwhelm it, to seize it, to imprison it, to surround it, to understand it. As hard as it seems the world and our culture has tried to blow out this light. John says, the darkness has not overcome it. This is a man who got news that the Apostle Paul had been executed, as I said, that Peter had been executed. Perhaps he was the last apostle alive. And with a grin on his face, I'm sure he wrote, in spite of everything this world has tried to do to eradicate the light that is life, the darkness has not overwhelmed it. It has not put it out. Caesar couldn't do it. Tiberius couldn't do it. Nero couldn't do it. The destruction of the temple didn't do it. The death of Jesus hadn't done it. Because again, this was John who raced to the tomb the day that he heard Jesus had risen from the dead, or actually he had heard the tomb was empty, the body had been stolen. This was the same John that raced to that tomb, beat Peter there, but didn't go in because nobody rushes into an empty tomb except Peter. And then eventually John peered in that empty tomb. This was the same John that had breakfast with a risen Savior on the beach. This was John that was absolutely convinced that no matter what happens in this life, and that no matter what we face in this life, and that no matter how deep the heartache, and no matter how extreme the fear, and no matter how deep the depression, that there is a light that shines in darkness, and there is no amount of darkness, and there is no type of darkness that can put it out. So at Christmas, when we are confronted, as maybe in no other time of the year, at Christmas when we're confronted with the fact that there are problems we cannot solve, that you have problems you can't solve, that you are a problem that someone else is trying to solve, when we're confronted with the fact that there are people that we just can't control, and that no matter how rational we are, and no matter how many times we try to explain it to them, and no matter how many times we tell them our story, and no matter how many times we try to teach them to be empathetic and they're listening, no matter how many conversations we have, there are people we just can't control, and there are expectations that you're never gonna meet. Just like you oftentimes, and I oftentimes become or set the expectations that we expect other people to meet. We are reminded in the midst of all of that darkness that Jesus is life and light who overcomes darkness. There is always hope. There is always a reason to believe. There is a God who hears our prayers. There's a reason to wake up every single day and take the next step.
Thanks so much for listening to the Your Move podcast. And a special thanks to all of our supporters who make Your Move possible. We happen to think that supporting Your Move is a great decision, and it would mean a lot to have your support. To make a tax-deductible donation, visit yourmove.is/give. That's yourmove.is/give. Thanks again.